And we are live on Blog Talk Radio for Sports Club. Generally, right now, I would introduce my co-host, Cody. He is being, not detained, I guess, but his attention is elsewhere. He should be maybe calling in soon. But as advertised, we have a special guest on the line, and I'm going to bring him straight on now. And when Cody joins us, Cody will actually join us. But right now, from across the pond, which is a whole story unto itself, he is Todd Washburn. He is a very good friend of mine and Cody's. How you doing, Todd?
Hey, Jeremy. Thanks for having me, man. Pleasure to be with you.
You know, me and Cody have talked about the whole time that we have never had you on this show, even though this show has only been going a couple months now. But it's good to finally get you on.
Yeah, I'm kind of offended. Me and Cody used to be co-workers at the same radio station out there in the Bay Area, and I didn't even get consideration, but there was a little bit of transition time that I had to take, and I couldn't actually, you know, get online because of the time difference. But now we figured it out.
Yep, exactly. We have figured out some sort of way, at least. And like I said, hopefully we can get him on here in a second. He was getting some stuff cleaned up. There was traffic or something on the way home, he said. I didn't hear exactly what he said because we were going live, as I heard, but that's okay because I know we can talk sports without him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not saying that we wouldn't like him to join us, but, you know, it is what it is. Is there anywhere in particular, you know, let me tell a little bit about you first because a lot of people are probably not going to be satisfied with the fact that you're just friends of mine and Cody's because that could be a long list of people, but you're actually a really good friend of ours. And you spent time in the United States Army, correct?
Yep.
And like you said, you worked out at 95.7 The Game out in the Bay Area where Cody is currently.
Yep, I started as an intern for 6 months and worked my tail off for free, and I got a job there, started off as a board operator, and then they moved me to nights as the nighttime producer and different specialty shows.
Absolutely, because you were on there with Guy Haberman, correct?
Yeah, I was my nighttime shows, I was mostly right before him and I had left. It was me and Troy Clarity doing nights. Prior to that, Guy Haberman was on the night shift, and then Haberman went with Middlecoff on the afternoon show.
Yep, and then through stories that I don't know the ends of, they are not currently there still, but you can still catch them in their podcast, I believe, through their social media. And I always liked Habes, or Habs, as you called him.
He was all right, Guy. I never had any problems with him. It's just one He's okay on the radio, but he takes some getting used to in person. He's kind of got that really dry, shy sense of humor where you could kind of take him as a jerk at first, and then once you kind of warm up to him, you start understanding where he's coming from. Then you're like, oh, I get it. I get it. Okay, cool. He's not a complete jerk.
You know, kind of like a Seinfeld thing. Like the first time you watch it, you're like, okay, maybe I just missed that. But then you kind of figure out the rhythm and figure out where he's coming from, and you're like, oh, you know what? That is funny.
Yeah, I can't think of anybody that I really didn't like at that station. I pretty much got along with everybody. I think my favorite to work with was Rick Tittle, if you ever listened to his show. He was one of those guys that had that dry sense of humor, but once he started liking you and you warmed up to him, like you were in like Flint. Like he'd take care of you, and he never treated me badly. He never treated anybody else badly, and it was a blast to work with pretty much everybody that was there. As long as you were cool, like you got along with anybody.
Absolutely. You know, that's kind of the vibe you get from listening to all the different shows they have there and such. Anyway, they got a really good cast of characters, so to say, and pretty much every show brings something different. But we'll leave some of the Bay Area stuff in the off chance that he calls in. But for now, let's start with baseball, because I know baseball is pretty big for you. And it's a pretty big sport around here right now because those Atlanta Braves are just at least entertaining, even if they lose every other game. But
yeah, they just lost Freddie Freeman to injury, didn't they?
Yeah, I was watching that game. That was it was a crazy game. It included a Jose Bautista bat flip when they were down 4 runs. It was very interesting.
Yeah, that really bothers me these days when we're in the age, especially when it comes to baseball, right? where they're losing ratings right. and their viewing audience is getting older. So you would think as the natural progression of things, we have a new generation of kids and young adults out there that want to see things more exciting. They want the NFL to be faster and harder hitting. They want hockey to be harder hitting, and they want fights, even though they don't like that there. Baseball, you need something to market to a younger audience. And you got these young guys like these Harpers and these Trouts and Bautista and Yasiel Puig, and they bring character to the game. And every time they do something characteristically, it becomes a national headline, and the purists, you know, just stomp their feet and cross their arms and poo-poo on it. Like, give me a break, would you?
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. And maybe it's part of my generation that feeds down into it. I like to think it's the generation behind me, or behind us, rather. And it's, you know, NASCAR is okay. I like it for the marketing aspect, but I'm just kind of that business-geared type person. To me, NASCAR would be more fun, and a lot of other sports would be, if there was like a boxing ring, and if two guys really just don't like each other, get out of your cars or take your equipment off and just go at it, but just know that when you're in the boxing ring, you can't compete on the other level, but just let two guys go at it.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that baseball is going to need to learn how to change with the meta of the time, or they're going to get left behind, and they're going to get worse ratings than hockey. And those media dollars will dry up, and those big, giant contracts that these guys are signing will dry up, and everybody will start pointing fingers and wondering why. It's like, because you scared off a potential demographic to market to. I think they said the last time they took the consensus of the viewing, the average age of a baseball viewer is well into their 50s. Are you kidding me?
Oh yeah, that's absolutely the problem. And like it's like you're saying, excuse me. You know, we have these Matt Harvey's a whole different thing. We'll get into in a minute. But I mean, you have some of these young stars that the Yankees have now. The Cardinals have a few as well. They're all scattered throughout there. You have your Bryce Harpers. You have your all these edgy guys. And I know you're a pro wrestling fan too. It's these guys that would make great pro wrestlers because they have an edge to them. They're not afraid to talk, and they're not afraid to show a little bit of flair. Excusing the pun there, wrestling-wise. But, you know, so many people have problems with people like Bryce Harper and Jose Bautista. I'm actually big fans of the guys because they make me want to watch. And I'm definitely not 50, and neither are you. So, I mean, if they want us to watch, they're going to have to quit taking away all the fun guys.
Something's going to have to give. It's what I've been calling here lately is remember the subprime mortgage crisis of the United States. I refer to what's going on with baseball right now is basically a subprime salary bubble. That's okay. So I was talking about this the other day. Somebody brought up parity in sports, and they're like, well, you know, I don't want to see the Yankees and the Red Sox in it all the time. And it's like, well, what do you think of the highest viewed game of baseball in the Americas is? Whether you live in San Jose, California, whether you live in New York City, or whether you live in Boise, Idaho, it's the Yankees and the Red Sox. The major media
right.
markets are the ones who draws the most ratings, which equals money for revenue sharing for everybody else to put into their rosters and their farm system, so on and so forth. And these are the big markets. These are the ones that are attracting these kinds of players with attitudes. These are the ones that people want to see. This is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. And just not too long ago, I was listening to Colin Cowherd. He was talking about the NBA Finals last year had 30 million viewers. The NHL Finals had 5.
Yeah.
You
I mean,
make
just
a successful product, you know.
Exactly. It's, you know, the two biggest rivalries in sports, or at least right in the U.S. as far as sports, because, I mean, we could get into soccer and rugby and other stuff across the world, but the two biggest things here, you mentioned Yankees, Red Sox, that plays in every market, just like you were saying. The other thing that plays in every market, Michigan, Ohio State. And now that Harbaugh is a part of Michigan, this is a thing we want to see now. Two Rams that are just charging across at each other. They're going to go head to head, and him and Urban Meyer, it's a collision course every year worth watching.
You need these guys. You need Urban Meyer, Jim Harbaugh, Nick Saban to promote the sport and be an ambassador. Why? because they're the ones who fuels the entire athletics department and their scholarships. According to Title IX, if you have X amount of scholarships for football players, you have to have X amount of scholarships for water polo or for baseball,
right,
or whatever sport your school does. Do you think these programs make a profit for the schools? No, the football program is what makes a profit for these schools. So if you get these guys and they recruit well and they win championships, everybody else will get money.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, here at Impact Media, we've covered Georgia State baseball. We've covered the beach volleyball team, and we obviously cover the football team. Ask any of the parents, ask any of the athletes involved in these other sports that aren't football. They say, hey, we're all football fans, whether they're fans of us or not, because the better that the football team does, the more money trickles down to us. We get new batting helmets. We get volleyball nets. We get, you know, help in getting to these championship trips and stuff like that. Everybody knows how it works, and it's just the way sports is right now. If you're in a basketball school like Duke or a football school like Clemson, you got to know where the money's coming from.
Yeah, and that's what irks me so much. I don't know if you've discussed this yet. It's about the topic of paying college players. You can't pay college players, because if you paid football players $30,000 a year, you have to pay your water polo athletes $30,000 a year. Once again, according to the NCAA Title IX, everybody will have to get paid equally. In a sense, you will bankrupt your entire athletic department, and nobody will have any money.
Right. That's exactly right. And if they ever do come up with that rule before they bankrupt, I do believe I have a couple years of eligibility left. I'm going to go play on the cricket team.
Does anybody even have a cricket team over there? I don't know. I've never looked into it.
I don't know. Lacrosse is getting big a lot, at least in the southeast here, but I'm sure somebody does. You know, maybe Boise Tech or something like that. And, I'm happy to go up to Boise and play some cricket, because it's like baseball without all the running.
Yeah, it's probably some of those Ivy League white-collar institutions that probably
yeah.
can afford to flip a few hundred thousand for it.
That's true. But, we haven't really gotten into the whole paying college players, but I definitely agree with you there that people don't realize that once you start to put some chinks in the armor there, there's no turning back. It's going to be the slippery slope of how many of you guys can survive while paying the smaller teams you have because of the bigger ones. But let's see. We kind of mentioned Bryce Harper. He got the one-year arbitration deal, which kind of sucks for me because I really wanted him to be a Yankee next year. I think he's got Yankee written all over him, except for he'll have to shave his beard, so maybe he'll be a Red Sox. But it goes right back into that rivalry. Why not have one of the best, most flared-out athletes you have on the biggest rivalry? You know, like Matt Harvey, even though he plays in New York, I think he'd be better off playing somewhere else because, for one, he's kind of goofy, as we can tell. The Mets are having to deal with him. He really is a dark knight because of some of the stuff going on. He needs to get out of town, and I think Bryce Harper should maybe look elsewhere as well. What do you think?
Bryce Harper is he's the best player in the game, and the Nationals absolutely did the right thing because his next contract is going to be just gigantic. It's going to be the next highest paid contract in the history of baseball, and you have to. He's your home run king. He's your RBI leader of your team. He's young. He's got longevity on him, and he's got an absolute cannon in right field. And I honestly think he's this generation's Reggie Jackson. So, those kinds of players, he's batting .376 right now. You know, we're barely a third of the way through the season. He's hitting .376 with 13 home runs and 38 RBIs already. Already, his slugging percentage is 76%. His on-base percentage is 49%. That's almost one in two bats he's getting on base, whether it's a hit or a walk. That's the kind of a player that you cannot pass on. You can't let him walk regardless. If it costs you other players, and if it costs deconstructing your roster to fit that kind of money on there, I say you have to go for it. He's your marquee guy that's going to make up the difference when it comes to the marketing money.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's going to be the guy to bridge that gap. I mean, it's like you said, not only can he do all those things on the field, but off the field, he's in national commercials that actually make sense. There's so many other athletes that just they look completely like a fish out of water and one that's drowning on the shore at the same time. But Bryce Harper's actually funny. That one he has where he's in the hotel room with the kind of onesie on is pretty funny.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, you guys may not get it over there. I'll find it on YouTube or something and send it to you.
No, I have to watch all of my games on the internet here, and the commercials that I watch are through whatever stream I'm watching, so there's no guarantees.
Yeah, that's okay. It happens. Like I said, I'll find it on YouTube or something and I'll send you the link for it, but it's really funny. But as we round out talking some baseball here, don't know if you caught this. It seems like it was kind of a little more under the radar than I thought it would be. But the Yankees officially retired Derek Jeter's number 2, put him in Monument Park, and Red Sox Nation in general still think it's a hoax and think he's coming back.
I wouldn't see why. I mean, the guy has had a 20-year career in baseball. He's done it all. He's been there. And he's been an ambassador for baseball. I'm a diehard Cardinals fan, and I love my team, win or lose. But Derek Jeter is one of my favorite players of my generation. Before he was, to me, the Cal Ripken of my generation. I caught Cal Ripken's last few years. I was too little to really kind of see him develop. Like I watched Jeter grow as a rookie. I watched him become an MVP, a World Series champion. I watched the flip play against the A's and the ALDS a few years ago. He's the captain. And he's not A-Rod, always in the media and in the news for, you know, I'm banging this chick or banging that chick or whatever the case may be, or I'm, you know, involved in steroids. He's never, ever, ever, ever graced the headlines in that light. It's always like, hey, did you see Derek Jeter's new girlfriend? Man, he's got it going on. And he gets up and he takes his at-bat. He has a smile on his face. He doesn't have an attitude. What more could he possibly do? What more is there to prove? He's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And people try to say all the time, well, his numbers are well this. And I was like, what other player compares to what he did? Maybe David Ortiz as far as leadership, but Ortiz only did it towards the latter half of his career. Jeter was pretty much the captain from about year two on.
He was never, in my opinion, the best player on that team, but he was the absolute cornerstone of that team, and there's no doubts about it. There should never be any doubt about it.
No, absolutely, and I got to agree with you that our generation of the people that we got to see the careers from start to finish that we actually remember, Jeter is got to be towards everybody's at least top five. I mean, he's probably top two or top three to me. I mean, obviously here in Atlanta, I got to see Chipper Jones play, and he was pretty special, and the pitchers and such, but yeah, I think we could go through every team, including your Cardinals. I'm a big fan of Matheny even. So, I mean, anything the Cardinals do is it's just what amazing. We'll get into the Cardinals a little bit for a second here. I always like what they do. They're always such a good franchise. They always do really well. But here lately, why is it that they can only get, like, to the bridesmaid level? They're never the bride.
Here's the thing. Things really kind of started going downhill once Walt Jocketty left and went to Cincinnati to be their general manager. And Walt Jocketty really got along with Dave Duncan and Tony La Russa because Walt Jocketty was more a baseball guy. John Mozeliak is a business guy. So he put a lot more faith and trust in Tony La Russa to set his lineups, to make player decisions, to draw and hire his own scouts and draft well and free agency. And he took his advice, whereas I don't want to say it like this, but Matheny's kind of a yes man. You know, he's one of the boys. He's one of the good old boys club, and he doesn't want to rock the ship. And not taking anything away from him, he's a nice guy. He really is a nice human being. But as far as a baseball manager goes, he's too nice. You know, he prefers giving veterans too much of a long leash. And he'd rather throw Johnny Peralta out there because he's in the twilight of his career, and you'll turn the corner soon, Johnny. I have faith in you. We'll just keep running you out there, even though he grounds out on first pitch swinging. He chases things in the dirt. He's got bad wheels, and he's an aging 40-year-old shortstop. He doesn't have the range anymore. He's got a negative DWAR, and you've got this young guy who came up in the system, Aledmys Diaz. He's a fantastic player. He's rough around the edges. He's got a good bat. He gets on base, and he can make plays. You just need the staff to teach these guys. And I think a lot of the problem there was we've lost a lot of good staff. Mark McGwire we lost as the hitting coach, replaced with John Mabry. We lost Dave Duncan, and I think I can't remember Derek something or other was his replacement. He was another pitching staff coach, but there's been a lot of management turnover, and even though Matheny looks like he's been turning a corner the last 20 games, they're like 18-6 stretch right now. I really think it's more it has to do with John Mozeliak feeling the heat under his job seat rather than Matheny learning. Because he took a championship roster that La Russa and Dave Duncan handed to him. And he went to the World Series. He lost. The following year, he went to the National League Championship Series and lost. The year after that, he was a one and done in the playoffs. And last year, they missed the playoffs. Well, there's a reason for that. He's not learning. He's not getting any better. He's been the manager for 5 years. Love him or hate him, he's not the guy for the job. And then, of course, there was that scandal with the scout that was quote unquote stealing, you know, information from the Houston Astros database and hacking their stuff. And it's just been a tumultuous time for the Cardinals right now. And I didn't peg them to have more than 67-70 wins this season. So it's still too early to tell. We're only a third of the way through.
Right. And that's what I tell everybody. It's baseball is the biggest example of it's a marathon, not a sprint, because this season is incredibly long. They're not going to shorten it because they're making too much money. But as far as the Cardinals, do you think that a managerial change would make enough difference to where you guys could try to get, you know, compete with the Cubs because the Cubs are just on a good run right now? Or do you think it would take more than just the manager change?
I think it would take a lot more than the manager change. It would have to take a change in personnel. Right now, really the only veteran leadership they have on that team, per se, is Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina. And while they're long in the tooth and they've got a lot of experience, they're not exactly a team leader type of player. You know, they're not the guys that's going to, you know, bring you to the side of the dugout and say, hey, kid, listen, this is what you're doing wrong. You know, these guys are just lighthearted, goofy, just mix it up in the middle. But, I mean, don't get me wrong, Yadier Molina is great with a pitching staff, but he's not the rest of the team. You know, he doesn't connect with them on that level. And the same goes with Adam Wainwright. So you're going to need team leaders. You're going to need a different general manager. And honestly, I think you're going to have to shore up the scouting department. The Cardinals farm system right now is just completely out of major league ready arms, major league ready infielders, major league ready outfielders. They would much rather go out and sign broken down has been backup catchers and bring up Eric Fryer from AAA Memphis, even though he's been really good. And I don't know if that's a management thing, but it raises a lot of questions where you got a lot of these young guys who are hungry, chomping at the bit in AAA, and then you got guys up at the big league level who aren't producing, young or old. And it just makes me scratch my head. And then, you know, of course, watching Matheny's lineup changes, it's like, you know, playing musical lineup every day, your guess as good as mine who's going to be batting, you know, first, second, third, or fourth. So
it's not like when La Russa would do it to help McGwire out. Yeah.
No, Tony La Russa, this is my lineup. and this is how we're going to play every day until things go sour, and then I will make adjustments from there. But you're always pretty much sure that your pitcher is going to hit eighth, and you're going to know what your lineup's going to be.
Which I actually like that whole concept because I'm a big McGuire fan. But, you know, another day we will get into McGuire stuff and all. But joining us finally, I guess they were able to clear up all the traffic issues out there all the way out from the West Coast, which means this show stretches about an, I don't know, 8 or 10 hour stretch across the world. Cody Elias, how you doing, Cody?
Jeremy, how are you? Bavaria, Todd, my friend, how are you?
Hey, Cody, it's been a long time, man. Haven't heard your voice in, what, 2 years?
2 years, man. I heard you going on and on about the Cardinals. We all know the clash of the NL Central is still Pittsburgh. Down here, they're going to win the division this year. I'm going to stick to that.
He's been telling me that for, like, 3 years. Like, oh, Pittsburgh, it's their year. I'm like, no, one and done. Nope, kicked out of the wild card. No.
Pittsburgh's trying to dump their best player right now. I mean, you can't be the best team in the league if you're trying to dump your best player.
Bum. B-U-M. Bum. Trade McCutcheon.
But, no, we were finishing up all the baseball stuff and got on the Cardinals there because, hey, we don't talk a lot of Cardinals on here. But, no, I was gonna go next because – Hey, in all fairness, I have a lot of in-laws in Chicago, and they would say that the Cubs are still defending champs. So until you beat them, you're still second.
True. Whatever.
Year to year, but we still have
two silent guests right there. So
year to year, they're right.
Yeah, that's true. We'll transition to some football. We'll finish up with some NBA because I know we're going to probably get in a pretty good battle about the Warriors because I know one of us will defend them, and me and Todd will probably not. But what is a more entertaining or a bigger deal to you guys, Tom Brady on the Madden cover or Giselle says he had a lot of concussions he didn't tell anybody about?
Well, isn't it kind of funny that she came out and said he had concussions after he's on the cover of Madden? The Madden curse is already in full effect. I have nothing else to say on this.
I find that quite intriguing because the person that knows him the best and the person that is intimate with him in his life, I mean,
are you talking about Edelman?
There could be – no, I'm talking about his wife. You know,
okay. I just had to clear that up.
There could be some merit to that. I'm not going to say one way or another that that's true or false. But we all know that for PR and marketing reasons, the Patriots are definitely going to come out and say, nope, nothing to see here. We definitely know that the NFL for years have hidden concussions and they hid CTE. There's a movie out about it. And for years and years, these are things that the NFL wants to sweep under the rug because Tom Brady is one of their cash cows. If his wife, who spends the most time with him behind closed doors, says he was dealing with a concussion, then – you know, I would rather take her word over the team's word. But
sure.
As far as the NFL curse goes, I did some research all the way back to 1999. The only guys that did not get hurt after being featured on the cover are cornerbacks and wide receivers. Odell Beckham, Richard Sherman, and Larry Fitzgerald did not get hurt. Everybody else was a running back and Ray Lewis linebacker, Troy Polamalu linebacker. Everybody, oh yeah, Calvin Johnson also didn't get hurt. But everybody else
right.
got hurt. There could be some merit to this Madden curse.
In all likelihood, you could say that Fitzgerald was cursed because he's been on the Cardinals for so many of these years.
That's not really fair to say.
He's said about Calvin Johnson, too. He played for the Lions, and they've been bad forever.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Not really a curse. That's just unfortunate. How many great players? Barry Sanders was on an awful Detroit Lions team forever, and he's still racked up a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah, that's true.
True.
But, yeah, I got to agree with you guys. I think there's a little more – I do like that Giselle's being honest because I feel like a lot of people in the NFL are not, like about 90% of them. So at least she's saying it. I feel like the NFL's just going to – you know, Tom Brady's to the NFL, what, like we said earlier, what Bryce Harper is to baseball. He's one of the cash cows. He's one of the national faces that you associate. So they're going to sweep this under the rug. They're going to let Tom keep playing. After the fact, we'll talk about it. But – we'll have to keep an eye on this Madden cover curse because I think there could be some merit to this. And I got to agree with Cody. I applaud the efforts, Todd, of you doing research.
My pleasure.
Someone has to carry this
program.
We'll
have to add him to the show, won't we, Cody?
Someone has to carry this program.
Right.
Somebody's got, what
after
you, Cody?
We have an off-air producer. I was going
to
say we have
Cody,
an off-air producer that we haven't heard from in 3 weeks, so.
Cody used to be known at the radio station as Cody Elias Sports Bureau. So I'm kind of disappointed in you, Cody.
No, that's still there, Todd. It's just no one from the old days is still there. I'm the oldest person that's still there. Everyone else literally is gone. It's just me.
Wow. The old timer.
He has slowly eliminated all of them like a weird radio version of Survivor.
I mean, only Sean has survived, so I'm still there.
Absolutely. Let's see. I'll ask you guys' opinion on this one, too. Are you more excited to see Jay Cutler in the booth of a football game or Tony Romo?
Cutler.
Right?
Wow. I think having Tony Romo in the booth is just good for the game. I mean, how many headlines has Tony Romo graced? How many quarterback controversies had Tony Romo been involved? All the way back since Dan Orlovsky to Brandon Whedon, and now, of course, last season he's a little long in the tooth, and he's given his place to the young rookie. But, you know, Jerry Jones is big for the NFL. The Dallas Cowboys are big for the NFL. They're America's team, quote, end quote. So having Tony Romo in the booth, I think, is a name that everybody's going to recognize. I don't know if Jay Cutler is going to be any better than Phil Simms in the broadcast booth.
Cutler.
Go ahead.
Let's say with Cutler, it's intriguing because, well, he can bring good analysis of the game because he wasn't the best quarterback. He turned the ball over so much, so he can break down every interception that's thrown on the games on Fox he's calling. And also, he's married to Kristen Cavallari, so I'm sure he can tell some great anecdotes from her days on the Hills and MPB and what he does at night because, well, he is an interesting life now that he's not in the league. I don't think it's going to last for him. Someone's going to call him during the season to come back because he's, what, like 4 or 5 years younger than Romo, so I think he still has a chance to play in the league where, you know, teams are going to call Romo, but I think he's just done where Cutler will be itching to play because he still has a lot to prove, I mean, if he wants to, but you guys have seen his demeanor on the sidelines when he's not playing. He looks like he's not interested. He looks worse than Eli Manning does when he's confused.
I wonder if they're going to, like, bring him in. Like, I don't know if he's going to do, like, full-time broadcast booth or if he's going to be, like, that guy that cuts in. I've been finding it pretty funny the last few seasons. Somehow, some way, Jay Feely knows someone. And they have him on every damn broadcast. Every time a field goal is being kicked, here's Jay Feely. Talking about the intricate mechanics of kicking the football through the uprights, like why is this happening? Like, why do we need an expert to tell us about kicking a field goal? Please.
The next thing about Cutler and Romo is, like I said, they both are used to throwing big interceptions, so they can always just be right there when someone throws a big interception.
Oh, come on, it's not all on Romo now.
Okay, he's just good at muffing field goal attempts.
I'm not going to get into it, but people get so down on Tony Romo, but it's like, damn him for going out there and throwing for 500 yards and 5 touchdowns and their defense still blowing the game.
No, right. I agree with you on that.
It's all Romo's fault.
Everyone's going to take the shots at him because him and Cutler have the same amount of Super Bowl wins.
But it's not Tony Romo's fault.
I was going to say, the good thing is, Todd, when Cody tries to come up with a good anti-Romo argument, I just go, how are the 49ers doing?
Brian Hoyer's leading us to the Super Bowl this year. Mark it down.
He's going to do like the typical fan doesn't go, we got five Super Bowl wins. Everybody goes, yeah,
no,
but what have you done for me lately?
I'm not that guy. No, I know the team sucks. I embrace the sucks.
That sounds like a completely different podcast. But the other thing we'll get into, and then we'll get into some NBA real quick, because, Todd, I don't want to keep you too late. I'm not sure. I know we are past midnight over your way, right? Okay.
It's fine.
This is something, actually, Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk brings up a lot, and I actually kind of agree with his side of it. He feels that why is it that a college athlete coming out of high school can pick what school they go to there, pick their – employer, so to say, but they can't pick their pro team, that we should do away with the draft and just make everybody a college free agent, and the way that's going to balance out, because a lot of people go, well, everybody would be a Patriot or everybody would be a Cowboy. No, the cap is still there. So the Patriots have to go, we like you, but we don't have money for a fifth quarterback, so you're going to have to go play with Cleveland or somebody.
Todd, you go.
Well, to me, there's nothing wrong with the system that's currently in place. The only thing that I see that could be fixed is the drafting straight out of high school. Why the NFL has that 3-year rule is beyond me. I don't understand why we have a system where in basketball you can draft guys straight out of high school, baseball you can draft guys straight out of high school, hockey you can draft guys straight out of high school, even before high school for the draft their rights. So in my world, what I would do is I would get rid of the not drafting straight out of high school. Get rid of the one and dones in college. If you want to go to college, in my world, you stay there for 4 years. You get your degree, then you move on to the draft. If you want to play pro sports and you're good enough outside of high school, you get to get drafted straight out of high school. It's just that it's too simple. I don't understand why everybody has these rules in place. The current draft is fine. It's been working for ever since the modern era of football. What's the problem?
That's all right, real quick, Cody, before you jump in here. In order for that to happen, though, Todd, I feel like we need a feeder league, because all three of those other major sports have places for these young kids to go, because I know a lot of kids, no matter how good they were in high school, they're not ready to be adults, and the NFL's littered with them enough now. We need some sort of farm system that you can put them on until they seem like they're making adult enough decisions to be a professional player.
And that's what college is for, isn't it not?
Turn right onto Everett Avenue.
Huh.
But funny enough, on this subject, though, the USFL 2 years ago was trying to come back and actually be that feeder league for the NFL, which would be interesting if kids didn't want to go to college. They wanted to come straight into a pro ball thing. But the CFL's up north. They can go to the CFL. They can go to play arena football.
China has a league, and actually there's a league starting up, I think, out on the West Coast, probably – I don't know if it started this year or not, but I know people like Adam Schefter and others had invested into it that were supposed to be kind of the, hey, you can come to this league, and it's kind of like college and league all in one, and it's going to be a feeder league. So, I mean, I don't know if that ever materialized, but that was one attempt at trying to get around this.
It's just a money issue when you boil down to it. Who's going to pay for it? Who's going to be responsible? Who's going to take care of the athletes? Where are they going to play, in which stadium, at what time? Who's going to be the commissioner? It's when it comes down to it, it's just money and logistics. There should be no reason why the NFL doesn't already have it.
Bring back the XFL.
Oh,
solve your problem.
Terrible.
Let Vince McMahon run it again. Bring it back. You can get all these guys like Tommy Maddox, who are nobodies, that emerge and they can turn out to be half decent NFL quarterbacks. And it's a good way to combat the system if some of these kids don't make it or they want to jump into the league early. Because I agree with Todd, I think this year was the one and done rule. I think the one and done rule is stupid. It's ruining the NBA because you have all these college kids ready to go to the NBA after 1 year. Like most of the kids in this draft, perfect example, Markel Fultz from Washington is going to be the number one overall pick probably to Boston. How many Washington games have you watched this year? None. Nobody knows who he is. Everyone knows who Lonzo Ball is because his dad doesn't shut up. So, I mean, Lonzo's a decent player, but no one knows who Markelle Fultz is. So it's like you're wasting because this guy's not getting, he's not getting enough publicity on TV. So save that for at least 3 years, or even by Tata, go for 4 years. Then go, if you want to go to the NBA, go to the NBA. If not, at least you have your degree and you can go and start your life. But I think it's just the one-and-done rule is so dumb. They need to get rid of it because it's ruining the NBA. And it's okay. I mean, hockey makes sense. You got guys like Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby who are the exceptions who are going to be awesome when they're 18. You got a lot of guys who get drafted at 18 in the NHL that don't make it. So go to college or don't. I mean, but get rid of the one-and-done rule.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and add Austin Matthews into that list of NHL guys because that guy had a pretty good rookie year.
Yep. Shout out to the United States of America. About time we have someone good in hockey.
He actually the problem with that is even though he's from Arizona, he plays in Toronto.
Yeah. Well.
So even when we have good American players, they play in Canada.
I know, and all the good players in the U.S. are Canadian.
We got quite
yeah.
a few good players in the States, by the way. Phil Kessel, Mike Modano, Zach Parise, Joe Pavelski.
Keith Tkachuk. Jeremy
Roenick. Getting there.
Oh, actually, I don't know if you guys have seen.
You had to bring up the Blackhawks, didn't you?
I don't know if you guys saw that one of Keith Tkachuk's kids plays for the Flames. That guy is such a throwback player.
Yeah.
He's probably going to get suspended a lot, but he's fantastic.
Oh, he's great for the league. It's Matthew, right?
Matt Tkachuk, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yep, from St. Louis, Missouri.
Well, I guess there had to be one thing wrong with him, right?
Well, they have the London Knights out here of the OHL. That's actually where Tkachuk got drafted out of. And he was the man out here.
Oh, yeah, he's fantastic. I knew he played out in London.
Dude, everyone else is leaving. Sorry, Todd. Cheap shot.
You'd be surprised. The hockey culture is kind of not so much London, but around the rest of Europe has picked up a lot of steam, especially up in the Nordic countries. We know, like Sweden, you know, gives most of their country to the NHL. But Finland's starting to grow. Slovakia is starting to grow. And even Norway has three players in the NHL right now, most notably Mats Zuccarello. I actually followed him when he played out in Jokerst in Sweden and for Fisk Asker in Norway. And he's like a god to those people. He's on the front page of their newspapers every time he does something. It's fantastic.
Hey, that's why Kovalchuk went back to Russia for a couple of years. Now it looks like he's coming back to the NHL. He went out there to earn back the respect because he wasn't really getting it around here, and I know I was one that wasn't giving it to him.
Well, he was a crybaby. He was sitting out games.
Exactly.
He was holding out for money and said, well, I just won't play. I'm going to leave the NHL and go back to the KHL. Fine. Bye. You're a head case anyway. He's 36 at this point. Who would take him?
I mean, people still want to
Yeah,
Jágr.
He's not Jágr. Yeah, but Jágr,
he's
not the anomaly.
Jágr's a freak.
Jágr is just once-in-a-millennium guy.
Kovalchuk can't rock a mullet. That settles it.
I'm not sure he could rock a martini, so I'd... But then again, many years of watching him here in Atlanta, I have the best scouting report in the world on him, and that's he's no good. Leave him over there.
He'll be back. Some team will throw money at him.
Yeah, I'm sure the Kings or Sharks or something will throw money at somebody thinking they'll make the playoffs and then trade them to the Houston franchise or something.
Well, because remember, what's his name came back for the Kings? Was it Setoguchi came back this year? And or was it?
Yeah.
It was one of those former Sharks. Teacher Setoguchi, one of them came back. It was a big story. It was a great feel good story. And then he just disappeared after that. So hopefully it doesn't happen with Kovalchuk, but. I saw that he wants to come back, and like I said, some teams are going to throw money at him. An Arizona, you know, a team like Florida, but a team like Arizona, someone that needs the fanfare.
Well, he says that he wants to play on a contender, so we'll see which one of those pony up. That's why I thought that L.A. might be a fit because, you know, they traded for Jerome McGillna late this year, and I was like, really? How old is that guy?
L.A.'s not a contender. They just fired their head coach and their general manager. They were dead last in their division. They're not a contender, and any contender is already up to their ears in cap space.
Right. Exactly. Let's get into some NBA debate because the message boards are lighting up as to why we're not talking about it now that Cody's on. Is it just inevitable that the Warriors and Cavs are what the NBA and the officials apparently, that's just the matchup that we're being told we're going to get?
It's not officiating. It's the players on the teams. It's the Warriors in the West and the Cavs in the East, and then there's everybody else. There's just no debating it, no getting around it. They have put together super teams. It's ridiculous when you look at – like, I was watching the game last night, and it was an absolute bloodbath. There was a point where the Cavs were up by 40 points, and they started resting their starters. Like, this was the second week of the NBA season. Kelly Olynyk, they had Al Horford and Marcus Smart all trying to guard LeBron. And what did he do to them every single time? He just drove the lane. Every single time, nobody could stop him. It took Isaiah Thomas to start tackling LeBron James in order for them to stop him. And that's he's had the greatest statistical year of his 14 years in the NBA. And he is surrounded by players who are all having statistically the greatest years of their NBA careers. Heck, Love last night, he had, 32 points and 12 rebounds? And six of those were three-pointers? You're getting threes from your four and your five? Yeah. When you're getting 3 points, open looks, mind you, but you're getting threes drained by your four and your five, it's ridiculous. And then you look over in the West, and I have to caveat the West. The Warriors have only played two teams in the last two playoff years with completely healthy teams. That was the Oklahoma City Thunder that went up 3-1 on them, and they blew it, and the Cavaliers last season that they lost to. But absolutely, they're crushing everybody else, especially when they don't have their best player.
Exactly.
I think the Cavaliers have the edge there.
Well, I think they do. They have the best player on the planet. And like you said, here it is, year 14, and he's still – setting this ridiculous pace, and it's probably career highs and all these different things. It's almost like, what was it, Wilt Chamberlain, who just stopped being a scorer and decided he wanted to do everything else just to show everybody he wasn't one-dimensional. I mean, it's kind of what LeBron's doing right now. He's like, you know what, I don't have to score 55 points a game. I can have, 12 assists and 14 rebounds any night I want.
Yeah, he's averaging 35 points and shooting 56% from the field. That's ridiculous.
This is the best I've seen LeBron play in his career, and the guy's not slowing down. He's just broke – last night he close to 50,000 career minute mark. Like, that's incredible. The guy does not take – like, yeah, people are going to sit here and complain because he takes nights off, and that's fine because every team does that. I mean, yeah, Harden and Westbrook don't really do it. Whatever, it's going to happen. But LeBron's 32 years old, going on 33. He's going to sit games out. Who cares? He's the best player in the league. The whole resting – I don't want to get into it because I think Jeremy and I have done it before, but – when LeBron wants to rest, let him rest. They took the entire month of March off, and look at them now. They haven't lost a playoff game. They won 12 straight playoff games going back to the NBA Finals last season. And Todd's right. There are super teams. They are kind of bad for the NBA because these playoffs have been terrible. They have been terrible. Blowouts every single night except for a couple overtime games. That game six between the Wizards and Celtics was good. But other than that, like, and the Warriors come back the other night. Like, that was a good comeback. But it's like, other than that, the Warriors haven't been tested all postseason. Either have the Cavs. Like, Indiana gave the Cavs the biggest fight in the house in the first round. So Boston's in trouble. I like their team. I like Brad Stevens. But Isaiah Thomas is getting destroyed in the pick and roll because he can't defend on a switch. He's too small. And they don't have enough offensive talent on that team. So when you get those points from Kevin Love and he's making his threes, Kyrie Irving had 11 points last night, and they still won by how many points? 13? He had 11 points. He's supposed to be their second-best player. So the Cavs are going to win in, like, five games. We're going to get the Warriors and Cavs in like 30 days from now because there's going to be so much damn time between the time the conference finals going into the finals because the way the NBA has it set up. So you're going to have to sit here and wait for 8 days for that to start, and you're going to get the trilogy, which everyone wants. And, everyone goes, oh, the Warriors are going to win. This is the Warriors' year. I don't know. Cleveland's playing really well right now. So I kind of want to see them both going into the finals 12-0, and you can see that, you know, both teams trying to get that perfect record, which obviously won't happen. But to have that happen, that's incredible, because the last time for this to happen was the Lakers of the early 2000s when they went – or yeah, the Lakers when they won the title, I think the second year with Shaq and Kobe. They went 15-1. The only game they lost was game one of the NBA Finals to Allen Iverson. So it'd be great to see. I want to see this matchup like everyone else. And LeBron playing at this level, I want to see who on the Warriors can slow him down.
All right, real quickly, if we do get Warriors versus Cavs, obviously I got the Cavs in that because we saw what LeBron did by himself when everybody else was hurt a couple years ago. He took the Warriors all the way to, what, six games or so. When he had everybody healthy, he pretty much ran over them and did what he wanted last year. So I got the Cavs. Who do you have, Todd?
I have the Cavs in five or six, as long as LeBron is playing like LeBron is playing. The Warriors have not been tested, like Cody said, in these playoffs, because when they beat Portland, they didn't have their best big man in Jurkic. When they played the Jazz, right, they didn't have their best big man in Rudy Gobert. And there was nobody in the paint that can stop them. Now they're playing a San Antonio team whose some of their starters are 39, 35, 36, 34 years old. Pau Gasol is not 2005 Pau Gasol. He is not quick in transition. He is not going to stop anybody coming through the paint. He's there as just a rebounder, primarily. That's all he's going to give them at this point. And with or without Kawhi Leonard, it doesn't matter. The you look at the Warriors team, and they're all 24, 25, 26. They have three guys in their 30s, and that's David West, you got Matt Barnes, and you got Iguodala, and Petrulia is 33. That's the
Sean
oldest
Livingston.
They have
Livingston.
On their roster. Oh, yeah, Sean Livingston as well. So it's still not even a test. You're playing the all-star, Western Conference all-star of 10 years ago. So when they get to the finals, they're going to see what playoff basketball feels like, and I want to see a healthy roster versus a healthy roster. I don't want to make any excuses for injuries. And we can settle this, but I still think just the way LeBron is just beating people down. Kevin Love, hey, look, Kevin Love is not the greatest defender in transition that I've ever seen. But last night, he was beating those small guys back. He was making plays in the paint. He was getting open outside the arc, draining threes. I mean, this team, they're doing no wrong right now. This is going to be a test. If the Warriors beat the Cavs this year, they're the greatest team of all time.
So I think I can give them that. If this series will go seven games, obviously I'm going to take the Warriors. I think the Warriors are talented. It's a good matchup, though, because the Cavs added all the three-point shooting with Korver. Now you got Love shooting threes. They match up well with the three-pointers, and it's gonna be great because I wanted to see Houston and Golden State in the Western Conference Final because I thought Houston matched up a lot better because of their three-point shooting ability and their ability to run in transition, but it didn't work out that way. Now you're playing the Spurs where LaMarcus Aldridge scores 8 points when you don't have Kawhi Leonard, so that's not gonna win for you. But going to the finals, it's gonna be great to see these teams match up because everybody wants this. If the Warriors win, I think you can make the argument that it could be the greatest of all time. But if they lose and LeBron wins, I think this is where everyone goes, this is LeBron James is the greatest basketball player of all time because he beat the Warriors super team 2 years in a row.
Right, exactly. And Cody, I know you're on a time constraint as well. Do you have time for one big argument here?
Sure. What are we arguing about?
Well, it has to do with those Spurs we were just talking about and the fact that I think I heard this on Colin the other day, but I absolutely agree with him. I'm ready to move on from Greg Popovich, that he's no longer intriguing. This team is aging the way it is, and it's just when he speaks to the media, it's just it just makes me want to throw something at him.
You want to go first, Todd?
Yeah, he's definitely got that Phil Jackson, Pat Riley, like, senility going on. I think it's in the personnel, you know, like, their players are too old. The two youngins that they do have in Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge, they're fantastic, but I think people put a lot of responsibility on Kawhi Leonard, and he's not ready for it. I know he was Defensive Player of the Year last year, but let's be honest about Kawhi Leonard, okay? When he's on the court, they outscore opponents 9 points a game. But when he's off of the court, They're 7 points better defensively. He hasn't grown into himself yet. He is not at that level to where he can take a team and put it on his shoulders and run with it. The guys that did that, Tim Duncan's gone. That was your team leader. Tony Parker's 35 years old. He's not going to be around forever. Manu Ginobili, he's 39 years old. He's not going to be around. I think the problem is they're not making any trades for impact players like a Paul George, for example. He could have been something. Or get like a – I hate people going to hit me for this, but Amari Stoudemire, or you can get Melo, somebody with some kind of experience into that team and train up your young guys. I don't understand their passion, and I think it's Popovich. I think it's just, he's just too loyal to the veterans, and he wants to bring veterans in, and his system works, but not with guys that can't run the floor for 60 minutes a night.
I disagree. I think Popovich is good for the NBA because I think having a throwback like him, who's out there, he's very outspoken, and he's going to say what he wants to say. And not only that, you're right, he has a great system for what he does. The Spurs need a point guard. Tony Parker's getting old, and that's fine, whatever. Patty Mills can't shoot, and he's not a real point guard. He's more of a combo guard because he can't shoot, and he's not really well. He can't defend, and he's got a lot better as a shooter. But they need a point guard. You have Kawhi. You have LaMarcus Aldridge. You have Jonathan Simmons, who they really like, who is an undrafted kid, which is crazy. They have Kyle Anderson. They have a lot of nice young pieces that will grow into that system. And Pop always find that international player that nobody's ever heard of before, and they turn out to be really good. Boris Diaw, Monty Ginobili, Tony Parker. There's always someone they find that goes in that role. Boban last year, who now plays for Detroit, he was a big guy that everyone loved. So I think Popovich is good for the NBA because he's won all those titles. Yeah, he had Duncan for them, but it doesn't matter. He took players like Bruce Bowen, who no one wanted, who was a great defensive player, and they won titles. I think once he steps down, though, and I want to see what Todd, what you think, because me and Jeremy have discussed this. I think when he steps down, I think Coach Bud, Bud Budenholzer from Atlanta, is going to be the guy that takes over in San Antonio.
He could be, but he's going to have to make some personnel decisions. They're going to have to do a better job of bringing in better players because, let's be honest, they don't draft well because they're never the worst or they're never the best. They're always drafting low, so they have to make deals or they have to go out and scout people. And then you've got the unfortunate side effect is it's just like OKC. Who wants to go live in Oklahoma City? Who wants to go live in a little town like San Antonio where they got them big women? There's just not as much to do, and there's not as much glitz and glamour like L.A., like New York, or a Boston, or even D.C. There's just not enough. That's another thing that you got to understand with these players is it's not just about the team. You got to look at, is the ship sinking or is it growing? Is the team going to be big? Are they playoff contenders? And do I want to buy a house there and raise my family?
You're right.
It's true. I think that's
so they have the Riverwalk.
Go ahead. That's probably go ahead.
No, that's all I said. Just the Riverwalk. That's all I'd say. That's all the only attraction I know of in San Antonio, besides the Alamo being around there.
And you got to make sure to always remember that.
Nicely done.
I've been trying to say it all week. I'm glad somebody finally got it. But, I think that's the same knock that we have here in Atlanta as to most of the time the only reason the Braves are good is if they home-grow talent. Same thing with the Falcons. There's never that big-time free agent outside of, like, Deion Sanders or Greg Maddux in the history, and probably at least the history of my life here, that big person has come into Atlanta to change one of these franchises for the better. I think it's that same argument. Just for some reason, Atlanta's not a place people want to go to raise their families. They want to come here to retire.
I agree with that on Atlanta. I agree with that. Because if you can make the argument, and no offense, but you can argue that they're the worst professional sports town in the U.S. because they've never won any titles. They haven't won any titles. The Hawks, the Thrashers left. In the last, like, 40 years, you can say that besides – because it was always Cleveland. You can't determine it's Atlanta because the last one they won was the Braves, won that one in 95, and they squandered how many chances to win a World Series. The Falcons have been the two Super Bowls. They didn't win. The Thrashers left, and the Hawks, and when they get there, they don't win. So, I mean, Atlanta's – it always from afar seems like a decent sports town because the teams are always good, but I mean, it's just on paper. It's people are gonna say it's not because of the titles, and you're right. You get people like Maddox and Deion Sanders to go there, but when you have homegrown talent like the Braves have had, Freddie Freeman gets hurt every year. He's not out for 8 weeks because of his wrist. It's unfortunate for
what
happened.
His fault.
I know, but it's still, it's just the guy gets hurt a lot. So when you have talent, you want him to stay healthy, and he got hurt. So that's why that's why San Antonio needs to keep drafting, getting these international guys and finding guys, because when they are bad, they get Tim Duncan and they get Kawhi Leonard. So when they are bad, they find people.
Well, Cody, just make sure you have a pen and piece of paper and write this next bit of information down. In 2 weeks, we're going to have that worst sports town debate, because I heard what your buddy Joe had to say, and I didn't really like his argument
Chicago.
So much. I'll defend
Chicago.
My town, even though I agree with part of it.
Yeah, we can do that. I'm down for arguing that, because there's so many different teams you can make arguments for, and it depends on the sport, the teams that are, how many teams are in that town. So, I mean, yeah, we can do that. I'm definitely down for that.
Chicago.
Okay. We will. So, yeah. Got to throw them in there somewhere. unfortunately, Todd, we'd have to also say St. Louis a little bit, because without the Cardinals, you lost your football team, and the Blues are kind of in that bridesmaid category too.
But we still have a Super Bowl trophy.
That's true.
It doesn't
sure
go
do.
To Los Angeles. Just saying, we have a Super Bowl. We have a Super Bowl.
It counts. All right, Cody,
oh, and by the way, the only NBA title the Atlanta Hawks have is when they were still in St. Louis in 57, 58 season? Or is it 58, 59 season? But, yeah, their one title is a St. Louis title too, by the way.
Yeah, as you'll find out in 2 weeks for that debate, nobody here likes the Hawks anyway, so they cater to the outside market, and so nobody goes to the games.
Well, it's also due to unfortunate location, is Atlanta's deep in SEC country. An ACC country,
right.
That's college football territory. Anytime you're in the deep south of the college football, college football is king. It doesn't matter what pro sports there, college football rules.
Michael
Which
Doyle.
Will help my argument in 2 weeks. Right. But, Cody, I know you need to go and take care of some other stuff. Glad we got to have you on, especially now that we had Todd on. Todd, we'll have to have you back on as well. But, Cody,
we'll
see you on later down the road.
Sounds good, brother. Todd, always a pleasure. Keep in touch, man. We'll talk soon.
I'm on Facebook, brother.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon. Jeremy, I'll talk to you in a couple of days.
Definitely. Stay safe out
there. See
you guys. And, of course, that was the usual co-host, Cody Elias, and a great friend of mine and Todd's. And, I think he thought I wasn't prepared for that Atlanta being the worst debate, but it's something that the show he works on did about a week and a half ago, so I've already heard his side and what they're going to say, because I know him and Joe Fortenbaugh have similar opinions on it.
It's all really subjective, like I said. It just depends on what colored lens you're looking at it through. You know, some towns are
right.
Hockey towns, some towns are baseball towns, some towns are football towns. I don't think there's any one town that you can point to that this is the worst town for any in all sports, period. If anybody says that, it's just purely bias.
And that's kind of part of my argument anyway, is that it just really – I mean, you could come up with whatever criteria you said, just like we were talking there. And, I mean, for a couple years I've been kind of making the argument that the – Atlanta's whole thing is that we're a college town. That's the whole point. I mean, I don't personally – the only team that I really follow in the entire state is the Atlanta Gladiators ECHL team and Georgia State, mainly because I have a lot of friends there now that we've covered them for years. But, I mean, when the Thrashers left, pretty much so did my allegiance to the city.
I lived down in Columbus, Georgia for 2 years when I was stationed at Fort Benning.
Mm-hmm.
And it sucks for pro sports because they got there a day late and a dollar short. You look at
right.
A couple hours east, you go to Athens, you got Georgia Bulldogs. You go a couple hours west, you got Auburn and you got Alabama right there in Birmingham. So it's you can go a couple hours up north, you've got UNC, Duke, basketball, you got Clemson in South Carolina for football. You got just within I don't know how many hours drive, but you could still get there reasonably well to go watch a Kentucky or a Louisville game. The entire hub down there is football and basketball at college. It's you know, not any particular fault of anybody in particular. It's just that's the culture.
Exactly. And let's see, what else do we have? You are an Arsenal fan, right?
Yeah, I follow Arsenal very loosely these days because everybody wants a winger out, and so do I.
I got to agree. When I actually decided to pick a team that wasn't Manchester United, because everybody was like, you should like them. You're a Yankee fan, and they're like the Yankees of the EPL. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't like their owners. I dealt with them when I was a Tampa fan. So I like Arsenal. I like the way they do things. But because of all the other stuff going on over this way, I very loosely follow them as well. So hopefully they'll make some of the changes they need to do, because we should have finished a lot higher. Even though we had a good season.
Two problems you got there is Arsene Wenger is still the boss for another year, and Stan Kroenke is the team owner, so he's not going to go out there and spend big bucks on big players. And
right.
I mean, it's gotten so bad that even legend, the Untouchables season, I think it was a 2004 season where they won, they had a perfect season and they won the Bremish Premier, the Premier League title in Tottenham, by the way, and Tottenham still hasn't won one in their own home. That's hilarious. But even in the Sun this morning, there was an article, front page of an exclusive with Tony Adams that says Wenger couldn't coach his way out of a paper bag. That's pretty damning. So they got a little ways to go,
yeah.
I think.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to let you on with the rest of your night because, like I said, I know it's getting pretty late there. And
I think they're gonna
actually turn hockey on here. I never know because the remote is on the other side where the producer is, and he's never paying attention to the show. He's always watching the TV. So I will find out in a minute what they're actually going to watch. But Todd, it's been great having you on. Obviously, we'll have you on for a couple other shows as well. Maybe we'll do some special Saturday ones so that you don't have to stay up late for us.
Hey, that sounds good, man. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed my time.
Definitely so, and we will keep in touch, and you have fun over there in what is probably my ancestors' home anyway.
All right, man. Take care.
Missed it by that much.